This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. Being stuck inside has everyone feeling at least a little stir crazy right now. And it's surprising how many people are turning that energy toward bread making. We're talking today with Sarah Molinaro. She's a principal lead instructor for the baking and cooking classes offered at Zingerman's Bakehouse. And she's coming to us from her classroom at Zingerman's, which, Sarah, I understand is empty at the moment.
It is, unfortunately. The tables are all askew, and it's very lonely in here, very lonely right now.
Sarah, have you been stress baking?
I have been stress baking. I always tell people when we're teaching classes during normal times, I always tell people, you know, I go out to eat a lot because I teach people to bake and cook all day long. And so it's rare that I want to go home and do that. But I need a chest freezer right now. I have been baking and cooking so much. It's ridiculous.
Oh, wow. Why do you think it is that so many people want to do this at this moment in time when everyone's just completely cooped up?
I've been thinking about that. I think there's a couple reasons. I think there's the first, the fear. What will I be able to buy at the grocery store? What will be available? What won't be? You know, there was such a run on flour and yeast initially. It was incredible.
Well, and loaves of, there were very few loaves of bread available, at least at the stores in our area.
Oh, absolutely. And so I think there's something very comforting about bread, period, full stop. And so I think the fact that people are able to, with the right recipes, with a minimal amount of equipment, bake bread at home and nourish their families, I think there's something very comforting and reassuring in that in a time when very little else is.
Do you think that it offers people a sense of creativity as well?
I think so. I think that, you know, we live in this world where you have so many options for recipes. There are so many cookbooks. There is so much information out there. And so you have so many sources that you can go through and find something that works for you. And also in the day-to-day lives, people always tell us in our classes, you know, they come to bake, they're able to bake here, but, you know, in their day-to-day lives, they don't have time. And so suddenly a lot of people have more time than they know what to do with. So that plus the creativity is leading us to a lot of good bread and other baked goods.
Just to remind folks that you are coming to us from the bakehouse, so any sounds that people hear are baking related.
Correct.
Sarah, I understand you're fortunate enough to still be employed right now.
I am, which I don't take for granted at all. I think these are very tenuous times, and so I'm very grateful to Zingerman's. I'm grateful to have a job, and I'm grateful to be, you know, food service and restaurants have really taken a hit, and I'm glad that people still want bread and need bread and that there is a need and demand for the knowledge and the skill set that the bakehouse is able to bring people.
What does your job look like right now?
Right now, what I've been doing for the last couple of weeks is we haven't had a class here in close to a month. And so what I've been working on now is I was making sourdough starters at home. I was doing a lot of videos around that to get people started and take them through the Zingerman's process of how we get our sourdough breads and all of our naturally leavened breads. I'm still doing some recipe testing for when things do return to normal, whenever that may be. And I'm starting to work on online classes, so Google Meet classes for people who want to bake together, want our knowledge, once again, our knowledge and skill sets, but can do so comfortably from their own home. So we'll see how that goes.
What are you recommending to folks who may be coming to bread baking absolute beginners?
I think that you need to be kind to yourself. I think you need to understand that there is a lot of changes and there's a lot of knowledge with bread baking that comes from making mistakes, and that's okay. And that's okay. You know, so much of working with yeast, with working with sourdough starters is a lot of trial and error. If I had a dollar for every bad loaf of bread that I've made, I would have probably upwards of $10,000.
I mean, it's kind of the fly fishing of baking, I feel.
I do. I think I totally agree. You know, I think that people often say that they're afraid of yeast, that they don't understand yeast. And I can tell you that so much of what I've learned about baking came from making lots of mistakes. And that can be frustrating to people, especially when, you know, right now in this world, you just want to make a good loaf of bread and know that it's going to taste good. But, you know, so much of, you know, the weather's been hot, it's been cold. There's all these factors that come into play when you're learning how to bake bread. That said, I've gotten a lot of positive feedback from students that I've been interacting with, and they say, well, it wasn't great, but it was still the best loaf of bread that I've ever made, and I think that's wonderful.
And that's a wonderful bar to keep in mind. Are there basic rookie mistakes that you might steer us around at this time?
Yeah, you know, I think that how do you find a good recipe? Well, you know, I think I usually avoid recipes on Pinterest. I'm not sure if I'm allowed to say that, but I just said that.
You just totally went there. Yeah.
Sorry. People post beautiful things. But I think that when I'm looking at good cookbooks, I always want to make sure that the recipe is in weight. And if people have kitchen scales, this is a great time to get familiar with them, because so much of bread baking, when you're measuring, volume measuring 6 cups of flour, if I were to do that, you would end up with a totally different amount when you went to weigh it. And that's because volume measuring cups are not created equal. And so there can be a lot of variability, and weight really helps rule that out as one of the factors that could come into play where things can go wrong. The other thing I would say is that when a recipe says you mix your dough and then you let it ferment, and fermenting is when you just have this blob of dough covered in a bowl, and a recipe will say, well, it's been an hour, so the bread must be ready. Well, you know, on a day like Saturday, almost two weeks ago, it was 70 degrees outside. You know, after an hour, that may be ready. On a day like today, or a few days ago when it snowed, you know, it may take a little bit longer. So I think learning to understand that your home environment, and whether it's cooler or warmer, you know, whatever's going on outside and inside, really come into play. I would say people often underproof their loaves of bread. And what I mean by that is that the yeast has not done everything that it can do at room temperature. And so I see a lot of loaves of bread when people take pictures. I always tell them to cut the bread in half and take a picture of the cross section. And I'm looking at the crumb structure. So, you know, what does the loaf look like? And if it's really dense and heavy at the bottom, that means the dough is underproofed. So, you know, if a recipe says proof it for an hour, ferment it for an hour, if it's cold out, I would say let it go 15 minutes longer, let it go 20 minutes longer, and you're going to get a lot better lift and bake on your bread.
It's just so funny. I got into Lori Colwin's book, Home Cooking, her baguette recipe,
yeah.
And it's rock solid, but it was also, you know, New York in the 80s. So, like, ingredients that she was using are not what I am using right now.
Sure.
And just any number of things. But at the same time, I mean, I don't think it came out the way she intended it, but it tasted
right.
Pretty good.
That's what I'm saying. So it's kind of like, you know, we're all doing the best with what we have in front of us, with the time that we have allotted. We're having to substitute ingredients, you know, and so we have to have some flexibility. And that can change the end result. But no one's to say that the end result is a total failure. If you're still eating it, I think that's beautiful.
Any baker who's going to the grocery store has noticed something that you mentioned, that there's some pretty key ingredients in short supply. Do you have any pro tips for us on finding what you need or working with what you have?
You know, it's funny. I have some family that live out in Los Angeles, and my aunt was up in arms, and she said, I just cannot find flour anywhere. And I will say that and I was like, okay, you're only going to one grocery store. And I understand we're all sheltering in place and we're not supposed to take excessive trips around. But I have been surprised that what's totally out at one store, you know, I drove to a smaller market, you know, or sort of a more local chain, and I had everything I needed. So just kind of steering people more local if possible, because I found that those stores need our business more anyway. But, you know, I think that it's always worth calling ahead. I know that's probably goes without saying. But, you know, there's some things. If you can't find whole wheat flour, for example, you have a lot of other options. This might be a great time to try what are known as ancient grains. You have kamut, you have spelt, you have einkorn. So try out one of those. I think that's wonderful. It's hard to find a substitute for all-purpose flour. If you can't find that, you can't just, you know, throw a bunch of oatmeal in there and hope for the best. But there, if you can't find certain dairy, if you can't find, you know, for example, you're like, oh no, I can't find, you know, chocolate chips. Well, buy a chocolate bar and cut it up. I mean, you have more flexibility than you think. Sometimes I found people get very married to a recipe and they're like, oh, I can't deviate at all. And while we do encourage you to always try a recipe the way it's written the first time, we understand that, you know, there can be flexibility and we can figure things out and they're still going to be awesome.
I keep seeing all these posts on Twitter about making your own yeast. It all began with this chemist who was like, you guys, you don't have to buy this stuff.
Yeah.
Have you tried that?
I have not, but I have a coworker who took a grape and put it in some water. And there's lots of wild yeast, specifically on grapes and raisins. And she was able to capture that wild yeast and she made bread with it. I mean, it was incredible.
The front door.
No, I swear. No, it was beautiful. She sent me the loaf and I was like, Sue, this is amazing. So I have to say that if you can't find yeast and, you know, there's yeast around us. I happen to have a lot of yeast around me because I'm in the bakehouse right now, but there are other options and other more common ingredients than you would think that can help you along in that particular process. It's pretty cool.
Are there any particular recipes that you'd recommend? You gave us a hint of like what to steer around, but What's a good all-purpose bread recipe that you like?
So I'm going to toot Zingerman's horn for a moment, if I may, and say that we have a Zingerman's, we call it our Bakehouse White Bread, and we put the recipe out on our website at the beginning of April. I want to say it feels like 1,000 years ago, but I know it wasn't that long ago. And, you know, very straightforward ingredients, some dairy, some all-purpose flour, a little bit of salt, some yeast, some milk, and some butter, a little bit of sugar. And you've got really your almost perfect loaf of white bread. And that to me is a really great beginner's recipe when you're just starting out with bread. And people, you know, we have a really active Facebook group here of baked students. And so people have been posting their results and they've been troubleshooting with each other. And I can see a lot of learning happening, but I can also see people baking with their children, you know, kind of grandparents baking virtually with their grandchildren. So I feel like it's a really accessible recipe that works for all ages. And everyone's been like, look at this beautiful loaf of bread. And I've never made bread before, they say. And that's really nice.
What else are you baking right now? You said you're getting close to needing a chest freezer. I want to hear what else is cooking.
This is true. I have been making, I love cookies. I'm making a ton of cookies. I'm actually doing some recipe testing for, we have a cookie class that we run in December. So I'm trying out different cookie recipes for this particular class. At home, not so much baking, but I've been cooking. I've never braised so much meat in my life. I don't know what it is. It's like, I think it's the same idea as making bread. It just feels very comforting to have a tremendous amount of braised meat on hands. I'm not sure who I'm channeling with that, some ancestors from back
Sarah,
in the day.
Can you freeze that?
Oh, yeah, I am. I absolutely am.
Huh.
Will it be as good? Probably not. But I cook like I'm cooking for 20 people just out of habit. And so I end up with a lot of braised meat, but I can, you know, I can reconstitute it and make it good. I've been making a lot of empanadas. I love a calzone. I find a calzone very reassuring. And in the summer, I love picking fruit. So I've picked about 30 pounds of raspberries last summer, and I'm still kind of working my way through there, also because I need more room in my freezer.
I'm dying. Is it dinner time yet?
I know.
Well, Sarah Molinaro, we just can't say thank you enough. And we hope that you and yours are safe and that we'll be baking together in better times.
Absolutely. Thank you. Thank you so much. Take care.
Sarah Molinaro is a principal lead instructor at Zingerman's Bakehouse.